JR Watches Star Trek for the First Time, podcast 221.
What up, everyone? I have an important message for all you lower deckers out there. This guy sucks!
What?
To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to JR Watches Star Trek for the First Time. Man, it feels like we were doing this just like a week ago.
It does. It really does. When it's like this much of an obligation, 6 months does feel like a week, huh?
It's been 6 months. And it's Lower Decks. So, yes. I mean, how hard was it to watch 8 episodes of Lower Decks? Apparently, it was 6 months hard.
It was very hard for whatever reason. I think I would, by the way, I'm John. And that's J.R. Roy.
Hi, you guys.
J. Roy. It's something to watch Lower Decks as just a person and just being like, I'm going to laugh at a show. But when you watch it, a funny show, and you're like, oh, I have to say something about this that's either A, insightful, or B, funny.
Yeah.
You can't really do either of those things. So here we are.
Here we are. So because we waited so long, it's a special treat. We're going to cover 8 episodes. Yeah. And it's the season wrap-up.
And we have something special in mind.
Yeah, that's
special
true.
Planned. Yeah, just in we specifically didn't prepare this.
When we get to the end and we do our episode awards and our season awards, would it be disingenuous if there was not an enormous amount of overlap in those awards? There should be an enormous amount of overlap in those awards. For the season awards, we do have like worsts. So that kind of helps that out a little bit.
I didn't say during our pre-meeting prep, because I was going to tell you, I didn't do like episode awards. I'm like, forget it. I'm just doing season awards.
Oh, well, then you'll get to hear my episode awards.
I can't wait to hear them. Yeah.
Okay. Some of them are different. I think I have some that are different because, well, so in your episode awards, are you counting awards for the 2 episodes we already did?
Well, yes, because as you know, as you informed me 5 minutes ago, I thought we had to cover those 2 episodes because I didn't write last podcast down correctly. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, guys. We both have really early onset Alzheimer's and we...
Yeah.
Anyway, here we are. But we're here for you because both of you have been waiting for a long time. And I don't know if this is us phoning it in or if this is... It's a little bit, yeah. So because some of these episodes we watched a long time ago and some of them we've watched a less long time ago, but basically it's not like we both binged this last week. We've been watching these episodes for 6 months. So we wanted to avoid us going, okay, something borrowed, something green. I think this was the Orion.
It seems
episode.
Like it's Orion's because it says green.
It says green.
Yeah.
And so John took the Memory Alpha summaries for each episode and
those are 20 pages long if you've ever attempted to read a Memory Alpha summary.
I used to try to use those to help like this podcast and it's like you can't read a book. You can't read a book. So John fed the summaries from Memory Alpha into AI and AI gave us an abbreviated summary. And
I said, please provide 300 words on this Memory Alpha summary. It's
kind of very good. Way to go, John.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, you've done this before.
And I got fake results. So we'll have to see if these are accurate.
Yeah. So that's going to be the big test because we don't remember these very well, but we should be able to recognize if something is completely
wrong. You hope so.
Yeah.
So if we really have forgotten an episode, we'll just like, sounds good.
Yeah.
That's probably right.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't think we have anything else. Do you want to get into this? There are 8 episodes.
We got 8. So let's just hurry and do this.
Okay. We are not doing Tuvix because we have.
Okay.
Neither are we doing I Have No Bones, Yet I Must Flee. And
which is
so
too
here,
bad because, you know, great title.
Great title. Yeah. And so let's start with In the Cradle of Vexilon, and I'll take care of this one, okay?
Okay.
Thank you, AI. The Cerritos visits Corazonia, an artificial megastructure run by an ancient environmental computer called Vexilon. Okay, so far so good.
Yeah.
Captain Freeman and the Commander Ransom discover that Vexilon's outdated operating system is causing issues, but attempting an update triggers a catastrophic weather event on Corazonia. Yeah, Vexilon's a really good computer, very kind, and the people on, this is me now, on this planet are really well taken care of. And I think all they do is art, right? They just make a lot of sculptures. That's
I've
their
often
job.
Thought, you know, this is a joke episode, but I remember watching this episode thinking, that's what we're striving for, right? automating everything and then figuring out a way to rejigger the economy so that we could all art all the time. Right. That's what we want, right?
That's the ideal. Yeah. That we all create, right?
We just create. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So back to AI. Meanwhile, Lieutenant Boimler leads an away team to upgrade a power terminal. Boimler's nervousness and attempts to do the task alone lead to challenges. On the Cerritos, Lieutenants Mariner, Tendi, and Rutherford face an unusual task of manually scanning isolinear chips. As they suspect hazing, they set up a prank to get back at Dirk, who assigned them the task. They make Dirk cry. However, Dirk reveals that he was indeed hazing them, and his traumatic Chula game story was fabricated. Oh, well, that spoils
Okay.
That went through that real quick. Yeah, so he said that he was stuck in a Chula game for months. That's part of the real plot. And he cried about it, and they're like, oh, and they felt really bad about him. It turns out later on, though, it was totally fabricated. He lied about it. I think during this episode, well, I'll just keep reading this, and we'll see if it gets there.
Yeah.
Freeman accidentally causes Corazoni's extreme transformation with volcanic eruptions and weather anomalies. Boimler and his team successfully set up the power relay, but face a dangerous situation as it overheats. Boimler sacrifices himself to prevent disaster. However, he awakens in a strange black and white room, encountering a talking koala. Later, he is revived by T'Ana, and the away mission is deemed a success, though Boimler's apparent death is revealed to be a simulation created by Vexlom. Is that true? Because I thought, like, at the end, Ransom's like, you never forget your first death. And then he promptly dies again, and T'Ana says, dang it, give me 30 cc's of whatever we just worked, right?
Okay, so I don't remember that really well then, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it was a simulated death. So I think AI, I think that one's a little wrong, but what do I know? We watched this half a year ago. In the end, Mariner, Tandy, and Rutherford reflect on their assumption that they were being hazed by Dirk, realizing they should assume the best in others. Dirk confesses to Ransom that he indeed hazed them, revealing the fabricated Chula gang trauma. Lancelot, Dirk's ferret, pranks Rutherford, concluding the episode with a comedic twist. AI always does that, concluding with a comedic twist. So here's the thing. The task they're given is they have to they have to scan all these chips, and the chips are really hot. Like, you got to pull them out and scan them, but they're like scalding hot, right?
Yeah.
And so they finish an entire room of chips and none of them have a problem with them. And then they press a button and it reveals that behind that wall of chips is another wall of chips, and the chips are even hotter. And so, yeah, that's where they think that, oh, we're being hazed. But it turns out that one of the chips really does need to be fixed or something. They scan one and it does have a problem, if I remember correctly. And I'm pretty sure that our friend Rutherford puts himself in the Wadi Chula game. I don't remember why he has to do that, but he does, and he gets out pretty quick.
He does, because I did write that down. Rutherford trapped in Ala Moraine is what I wrote down.
Yeah.
One thing that AI doesn't reveal or remember or know, because it probably wasn't in the data that was fed to it, but this was a Deep Space Nine episode, Ala Moraine, where they were all trapped inside some kind of computer thing.
Yep.
Which I don't really, that's one of the most forgettable Deep Space Nine episodes, so it's a miracle I remembered that. But that's where we are on Lower Decks, especially. It's like, that's one thing the season is doing. It's like, okay, you want Star Trek references? We're going to give you the lamest Star Trek references in the history of Star Trek.
This is a season four, the deep cuts.
Yeah.
So, okay. Another thing that's not really mentioned in the AI is the Vexilon, I guess, like, he comes back online and the planetary regenesis stops, and he's like, he's so sorry. Like, that the computer is really apologetic. I think at one point he says, why am I so damn stupid? Or something like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I thought this was a decent episode. I did actually laugh out loud once, since I'd like to keep count, right? And it was at the very end, and I already mentioned it. It's when Boimler dies a second time, and T'Ana says, give me 30 cc's of whatever just worked a minute ago. And so that was a laugh out loud moment. So also, what isn't mentioned here is Boimler, he refuses to let his crew do the task because I guess it's dangerous or whatever, but he just does it all himself. And I guess the point is he's supposed to learn that a leader actually has to lead people to do tasks instead of just doing everything for them. So he does it, and
okay,
then
that is this
it.
One. That is the okay, yeah. That okay. I was thinking, no, that must have come later because no, but you're right, because I have written down Boimler being lead, and I remember the clouds falling from the sky, like ice clouds fell from the sky, and he ran between the clouds because he didn't want anybody else to get hurt.
Yeah.
So good for him. I'm I was thinking about it today on my drive home. I was thinking about some issues I have with Lower Decks. And I think, strangely enough, Boimler, in his anxiety and panic and also desire to serve people, somehow he's the only one of the four main people that I kind of find that works for me, like in a comedy way.
Yeah.
But, okay. Okay, so that's in the cradle of Vexilon. Vexilon, a computer. Yeah, standard Star Trek plot.
No cold open here. Only half of these have cold opens. And I will say, every time there's a cold open, it's a season arc.
Right, yeah. We should mention that. I guess, I don't know if we would have... We must not have noticed this last time, because we only did the two episodes.
Yeah, we're only two episodes in, yeah.
Yeah, eventually, episode 7, I'm like, hey, wait a second. Lots of different ships are blowing up by this weird Boba Fett
Slave
ship.
One.
Yeah,
Slave One. Yeah, very good. It looks just like Slave One, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, next episode. Episode 4, Something Borrowed, Something Green. This is the one we used as an example because, of course, it's about Orion because it has green in the title. So we were safe there, right?
Yeah, very good.
Okay. This one's shorter. Okay, let's see. In the teaser, an Orion ship led by Captain Cosmia pursues a mysterious vessel only to be destroyed during an attempted pillaging. On the USS Cerritos, Lieutenant Tendi is granted leave to attend her sister's wedding on Orion, accompanied by Mariner and Talin. Meanwhile, on the Cerritos, Boimler and Rutherford engage in a comedic dispute over watering their bonsai plant.
Oh, yeah.
Upon reaching Orion, Tendi's family welcomes them, and it's revealed that Tendi's sister, D'Erica, great name, by the way, has been kidnapped. Tendi discovers that D'Erica staged her own kidnapping to force Tendi to return home. The sisters engage in a duel, resolving the differences, and they hurry to attend D'Erica's wedding. On the Cerritos, Boimler and Rutherford's attempt to mediate a dispute with the Chalnoth named Kokor using a holodeck scenario fails. However, they find common ground over a bonsai plant, only for Kokor to consume it. Back on Orion, okay, they don't say that. Is that the one? Is that where they start being
Twaining?
Mark Twain? Yeah.
Yeah, they solve their differences over Mark Twain. And so this creature, they take it into Mark Twain land and it doesn't do any good whatsoever. But then it eats their bonsai tree and drinks the mist. And then it capitulates to whatever Captain Freeman wants.
Right, right. I didn't like the Twaining. I don't know.
Okay.
That was pushing it. Okay. Back on Orion, Tendi and her family reconcile, and Devana reroutes power to a Federation ship, allowing them to crash land at the wedding. The ceremony proceeds, and the episode concludes with Boimler and Rutherford compromising on decorating their quarters. The episode combines humor, family drama, and cultural exploration, showcasing Tendi's backstory and her relationship while incorporating comedic elements on the Cerritos. Great last paragraph, AI. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Is this... I don't think this is the one. It must have been one of the first two episodes where their room is like right next to the one of the nacelles, and so it's just like blinding light coming through.
Blinding light. Yeah. I think it's the Kenny Rogers roasters.
Yeah. But I think they learned that there's a shade that they can just lower.
Yeah.
But okay, so there's a lot missing from that. So... Did he even mention? Okay, so D'Erica wasn't kidnapped. She kind of kidnapped herself because she was angry at... We call her Tendi, but her name is D'Donna? D'Tana? What's Tendi's real name?
It's Devana.
Devana.
Yeah.
Devana, that's a lovely name, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why D'Erica is so mad.
Yeah, D'Erica. So D'Erica has kidnapped herself. They think that this one guy kidnapped her, but it turns out that he's just a moanhead. He's addicted to pheromones.
Right. The pheromone dungeon was in this episode.
There's a pheromone dungeon. And at one point, someone mentions a cage shower, and I don't know what that is. It sounded sexy. So, but it's not Niall. That's a guy's name. Niall wasn't stalking her. She kidnapped herself because she was mad at Tendi because Tendi abandoned her. But really, I don't know what she's complaining about because she gets what she wants, which is to be kind of the head of their little crime family or whatever they are.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so Tendi's like, no, you're great and you're meant for this. And so I'm going to leave and you stay here and do those things. And so I think everyone's happy. Now, we also forgot to mention that Talim was trying to send a report about
This is kind of a season thing.
Yeah, there's like a part of it is she got rejected by the science council or something, and she wants to go, or she wants to get reassigned back to a Vulcan ship, but she keeps like not sending in her transfer. And I think actually the next episode she is like trying to send in a transfer request, but we'll get there. But she was going to send a report. I can't remember why the report was so bad, but she didn't send it in because she didn't have the consent of the subject, who I don't even know who the subject report is.
Non-logic things and the smell of humans. Yeah.
So what I will say is that this episode, I laughed three times. Mm-hmm. And they are all about the same thing. So there are four occasions, apparently, there's three that we see on screen, but apparently there were four occasions during
this
which
might be mine.
Mariner got shoulder daggered.
Shoulder daggered, yes, that was mine.
Including during the daddy-daughter dagger dance. Same shoulder every single time.
Because I only wrote one LOL, and it was just Mariner stabbed by three throwing knives.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, it was really good, so.
Okay. It's great. It's great to know that there's an objectively a funny thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, no, this is definitely it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was my funny thing. But when you say there were three funny things, it was her getting stabbed three times?
Yes. It was each time that it was brought up. And at one point I'm like, is there going to be a point in which like this joke is not funny because they do it too much? But the fourth time they bring it up, or the third time they bring it up, it's still funny because it's during the daddy-daughter dagger dance. I don't know. I thought it was really good.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. Okay. See, Pheromone Dungeon, I have that.
Moanheads.
Battle of Non-Pheromone. I'm not sure. Moanheads fight with Sister about, you know, being... whatever. Okay, yeah, I think we got it all.
Hmm.
There was a drinking game, right?
Maybe.
Is that how I wrote Tendi does skill by drinking game, or maybe Tendi does kill by drinking game?
There was okay, I gotta pull my notes back up. Let's see. What was this? This was something broad. Okay.
Do a search for drink.
There's a weird drinking game with a scorpion murder bug. That's what I wrote down.
Okay.
There's a murder bug drinking game. I don't know how it works.
Right. That must be it. Yeah, that's how Tendi had to kill someone by that. But I wrote T for technology instead of D for death, which is not my usual noting, which may affect my awards. By the way, I didn't finish awards. I was just going to hope to
You're doing great.
To finish during this, yeah.
Let me see if I can find all these. So I put, someone threw a knife at Mariner and it hit her in the shoulder. Just put it with the other bloody knives. That's the first one. Let's see. Mariner got hit by a second dagger, same shoulder. Let's see. And then I think the last one was probably the one that I mentioned. Yeah, there we go. Four daggers. At least four daggers.
Very good.
Anyway, I thought that was... I don't know if this episode overall was really funny, but those... That running joke was more than enough. It was great. I loved it.
I love the running joke. The Orions, not super funny in the Lower Decks universe, I would say. Yeah.
Well, what can you do?
Yeah.
All right. You ready for empathological fallacies?
Okay.
Let me pull up my version, and I also will have no cold open.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like the Betazoid. They're like ragers, John.
The rages.
Yeah. So let's see. In this Star Trek Lower Decks episode, Provisional Lieutenant Junior Grade Talin, a Vulcan, recounts her discomfort aboard the USS Cerritos as it transports Betazoid diplomats Dolorex, Catrot, and Cathew to Ryza. The Betazoid's exuberant behavior disrupts Talin, and she attempts to send a message to her former captain, but finds her signal blocked due to a security blackout. As the Betazoid's influence causes chaos on the ship, Talin suspects Xanthi fever, a condition affecting emotions, and urges for outside assistance. Captain Carol Freeman disagrees, insisting the ship's doctor, T'Ana, handles the situation. However, T'Ana's feral behavior complicates matter because, John, T'Ana's race eats Betazoids. Yes. And apparently...
Which, I don't know how much different they would taste than humans.
I don't know. But apparently she has switched to synthetic Betazoids. So would that still be weird to be like, if you're a Betazoid and you walk into her room and she's just eating like her clone Betazoid or whatever. And if the synthetic Betazoid, does it still like cry while you're killing it? I don't know.
I guess to really enjoy the meal, it probably would. Yeah.
All right. Oh, it should also be mentioned that when the Rages get on board, Ransom immediately wants to have sex with one of them, and they say that he's what's their complaint, that he is too easy, I guess, to get. I think at one point they carry around these drinks called whale bones, and I have a note that like Ransom grips one between his buttocks or something.
Yes. Well, I did write this down. Yeah, okay. One of them, they have a long, what is it? It's like this big long hourglass with a long stem in the middle of the cup or something.
For some reason, I think it's called a whalebone. I don't know if I was describing it or if that's what it was called, but that's what I have down on my note.
Right, but it's this long flute of a glass, like full of synthahol or whatever they're having, Romulan ale, whatever. And yeah, one of the Betazoids, I think, stuck it between his cheeks, kind of moved it up and down a little bit.
Yeah, I think
so. Pretty suggestive. Yeah. It's like a hot dog situation. Yeah.
Okay. So it's not mentioned in the AI report here that everyone on the crew is starting to go kind of crazy. They're all like getting excessively angry or whatever, right? They're all becoming ragers, sort of. And so we think it's the Betazoids. Anyway, I'll keep reading. Freeman eventually confines the Betazoids to sickbay, suspecting their influence on the crew. Still, the Betazoids, revealed to be undercover agents, overpower the crew, taking Freeman hostage. They explain their mission to investigate unprovoked attacks and plan to divert the ship through the Romulan neutral zone. So they're kind of investigating the jazz that's going on with Slave One, right? Also, when they switch from Rager outfits to action outfits, it's pretty exciting.
Right. Yeah, they have like what do they have? They have like these shorts. Is like these shorts, like ninja shorts, right?
Yeah, like action ninja shorts, yeah. It's very exciting. So, and then their lipstick cases are weapons? They like whip out these lipstick weapons. It's so anyway, they're kind of let's see. Anyway, where have I? Okay. Meanwhile, Lieutenant Brad Boimler undergoes unconventional security training with Lieutenant Shax. That's right. Shax says that he thinks Boimler is a candidate for the program. It involves slam poetry and other unexpected challenges. The ship's crew, affected by emotional turmoil, becomes increasingly erratic, prompting Mariner and Talin to investigate. During a conversation, Talin discovers that she's the source of the psychic disturbance. Due to unresolved conflicts, it's not Xanthi fever. John, what is it? Do you know the name of this?
It's Vulcan...
Bendai.
Yes, Bendai syndrome. Yeah, it's what Sarek had that one time.
Yeah, so she's projecting her Bendai onto everyone, right? So let's see. Mariner helps Talin reconcile her emotions, restoring balance to the crew. Freeman, no longer influenced, initiates a red alert, and the security team rescues her. The crew returns to normalcy, and the Betazoids express regret for their actions. Freeman forgives them, and they share intelligence on a mysterious ship responsible for the attacks. The Betazoids leave for Ryza, and Talin decides to stay on the Cerritos to study Mariner's chaotic ways. So that's fun. The episode explores themes of emotional conflict, Vulcan identity, and unexpected responsibilities within the Star Trek universe, combining human humor with character development. The final paragraph of all these AIs is like the lamest.
I know. It's the paragraph when I first learned to start writing papers. It was the paragraph I hated the most. Like, this is what they want, right? Teacher wants the summary paragraph.
All right. So like at one point, I think the one of the Betazoids is kind of playing on the other or something. Because what I remember is that Freeman has one of them admit how much she doesn't like the other, and then she convinces one of the others to kind of mind meld with her, and she specifically plays back that memory, right?
Okay.
Do you remember this? Maybe you do or don't remember.
That's kind of vague, in my memory, but semi-familiar.
Also, so Boimler gets his chance at action with the security folks, and I guess all those games, the point of them was to be emotionally healthy and stable so that when the time came to do security stuff, they wouldn't be frazzled. Because if you can do slam poetry, you can do security, I guess.
Right, right. Like the security, it's, I guess the funny thing about Boimler going to the security things is he's all disappointed that they're not like pumping iron or whatever. But yeah. All the dumb stuff they do would be something that he would just do in his own time anyway. Like, that's a very Boimler thing to do.
Yeah.
Because I wrote down slam poetry is the is a thing that the security club does.
Yeah. So I did not laugh during this episode.
You didn't laugh. I laughed twice. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, here it is in my notes. I said the Betazoids are from the BIA, and then I put they reveal kicking shorts is exactly what I wrote down. Yeah. Here it is. Okay. No, I laughed twice. First of all, the drink between Ransom's glutes. I did laugh at that. And then you're going to have to remind me of this. I just wrote, I'm not sure if it was a specific song, but I think it was just the classical music in the background of the party. I think it was just because it was like Federation classical music. And as the party got crazier and crazier, it's just funnier and funnier, like next to the classical music sound.
Mm. I don't remember that, but sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I must have been in good mood watching Empathological Fallacies.
Hmm.
Dolorex is a great name.
Dolorex. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Or Dolorex.
Because
I think you said Dolorex. I want to say Dolorex, but.
Yeah, I don't know. Dolorex sounds cooler.
It is kind of. I find it sort of interesting, not super interesting, but it reminds me of something coming up later. In fact, this next episode coming up. Some of my favorite Star Trek callbacks are things that you sort of wouldn't expect but aren't that surprising. The fact that there's a Betazoid BIA that's like the CIA that has a bunch of empathic mind readers who are also secret agents who kick a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like, we've never seen a Betazoid person kick anyone in all of Star Trek. But the fact that there are three girls going around kicking people, it's like, okay, that's not something we've seen, but I like it. And it's not just referencing something we've already seen. which leads us into Parth Ferengi's heart place.
Yes.
Which I'm not sure if I understand that title.
Parth Ferengi is the guy who runs the anniversary inn kind of place. And I guess he calls it his heart, the heart place. That's the name of the place. That's where Rutherford and Tendi go and they have to pretend they're married. Okay. I mean, you just want to read it. Yeah.
It is just the name of the place. Okay. Okay. Here we go. I'm reading it. On a Ferengi starship, crew members Jeef and his partner sort through their merchandise after a ban on arms sales by Grand Nagus Rom. Despite the profit potential, Rom believes in equality and hospitality. Jeef reveals a dangerous device but is scolded. When a mysterious ship approaches, Captain Jem decides to flee. Suspicious of Jeef, Jem orders him out. Jem? Orders him out, and the mysterious vessel destroys the ship. Yada, yada, yada. Okay, cold open there. The USS Cerritos arrives at Ferenginar, where the Ferengi leadership seeks Federation membership. What?
Yeah, weird.
Yeah. Captain Freeman and Admiral Vasari meet Grand Nagus Rom and Lita for negotiations. Rom, inexperienced in business, seeks adjustments to the application, while Lita adeptly manipulates the contract. Vasari, understanding them, agrees to Freeman's changes, including a signing bonus condition. However, the Ferengi misread the fine print, requiring them to recruit Kronos into the Federation. On Ferenginar, Lieutenant JG's Tendi and Rutherford pretend to be a married couple to review attractions. Right, because they have the dumb assignment where it's like, okay, you Lower Decks, you have the assignment to go to the Ferengi homeworld and make sure like the tourist attractions are good enough for the Federation or something.
Yeah, they're doing like a TripAdvisor guide for Ferenginar, right?
Yeah, that's right. They're doing a TripAdvisor guide. Okay.
Yeah, Boimler spends the whole time watching trashy Ferengi television.
Yes, and I hope it mentions it here because that was actually the part that I really liked. Mariner, assigned travel guide duty, gets into a brawl leading to her arrest. Okay, and this starts kind of the big season arc that Mariner, you wouldn't believe it, but this season... Guess what? She's a looser cannon. but anyway, that really starts, you know, kind of mid-season, whatever. Anyway, Mariner's going crazier than usual. Okay. Tendi and Rutherford face challenges maintaining their fake marriage. Mariner's friend Quimp bails her out, expressing concern about her reckless behavior. So Quimp is just a Ferengi that she's pals with, I think.
It should be mentioned he bails her out with a predatory loan. that she's now stuck with. So,
yeah. Okay. At Quark's Federation Experience Bar and Grill. That's actually a really great... I don't know if this is a joke or not, because you weren't there with me. Remember when we first started doing the podcast and I said, I'd like you to come to Las Vegas if you can. You couldn't. To go to the Star Trek experience, because this is like before the movie and everything. So it was all old Star Trek, and it was just this casino thing where it was like you can go and hang out in Star Trek sets and have like Star Trek drinks and Star Trek themed burgers and stuff like that. And the bar was called Quark's Bar, of course. And so it's funny that on Ferenginar, now that they're welcoming the Federation, it's called Quark's Federation Experience Bar and Grill, which I think is a complete take on the Star Trek experience that used to exist in Las Vegas. But okay.
That's great.
Tendi and Rutherford's fake intimacy escalates, causing a scene. Meanwhile, Boimler obsessively watches. Okay, the scene was, right, where they lift the table up and they're like, okay, you must copulate or something like that. And
oh, there's
like,
a lot more to this. Okay.
Okay.
So first of all, their desserts are sexy versions of each other. So they have to eat like naked statues of each other. And then they're sitting on this chair and the chair can tell if they're telling a lie. By the way, the problem is like if they really aren't in love and they're just lying to get the deep discount, they're going to be in huge trouble. I don't know what the consequence is, but it's really bad.
I feel like it was they were executed or something. Like it was
something like that. Yeah,
something big. Yeah.
So they have to say what they love about each other, and the chair can tell if they're telling the truth or not. And they do say what they love about each other. It's not the romantic stuff, but you know that these two are like best friends and kind of, you know, into each other. I think at the end of the episode, doesn't it show them in a Jeffrey's tube with some like intertwined legs?
I remember that. They're like, we can be comfortable now that we have to do this work together. And they were like in the Jeffrey's tube, pretty much on top of and in between each other. You can only see their legs. They're just like right in there. But they were working on something as friends. And so therefore they weren't like nervous or aroused or anything.
Okay, so anyway, Miglamo shows up and he's like, hey, I didn't know you two were married. And he's like, and like everyone's like, what? And he's going to rat them out. But then they say this story where they're like, well, we are married, but now we're both in love with you, Dr. Miglio, and we're getting divorced because of you. And so we're leaving. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, what? And after they leave, he is awarded the Home Wrecker Special.
Okay.
So that's my laughing moment. I laughed during his awarding of the Home Wrecker Special.
Yeah. Okay. The funny thing is you were just like, okay, you're missing a lot here. But the one thing I was going to say is something you didn't include in your little summary there. And that's where they're like, okay, you have to compulate in front of everybody. And so their table is raised up, but they're like, okay, don't worry. We're going to lower a curtain for privacy so we get to hear you, which is – I actually thought that was really funny because hearing someone going for it is kind of it's a lot grosser and intimate than not seeing it happen. Mariner realizes her destructive behavior is a misplaced rebellion. Back at negotiations, Freeman exploits the Ferengi's oversight, preventing them from getting the signing bonus. Rom, impressed by Freeman's cunning, agrees to the original terms, highlighting mutual respect between the Federation and Ferenginar. This little thing doesn't...
That's not quite true. We should mention we got, Lita. Chase Masterson,
yes.
Yeah, welcome back, Chase Masterson.
Yeah.
So the thing is they were like, they were putting the Federation over on a barrel, and the one guy was like, you have to put up with what they want. They'll never join if we don't agree to their terms. And finally, Freeman's like, screw this. Here's the terms. Agree to them or don't. But the whole point was that our friend Rom was testing them because they didn't want to join the Federation if the Federation was going to be a bunch of suckers.
Yeah.
Which and so he agrees to join.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah. They proved themselves to not be suckers. So.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. It's weird that the Ferengi are joining the Federation because the Federation is a bunch of commies.
Yeah.
And so, why would the Ferengi join? So the only reason they would possibly join, and this kind of is a funny thing that does make sense, is if it's like, okay, we have to – these socialists in the Federation have to have business sense for us to feel comfortable with them, because we still value business, even though we're joining. I don't know. It is crazy that there's no way the Ferengi would ever join the Federation, because Rom and Lita, sure, they have a lot of reforms, but I mean, come on, how many centuries were the Ferengi just all about capital and profit?
So, yeah, it's still a thing. Yeah,
yeah. But it also, in the last episode of Next Generation, I do remember this. Remember where Picard was going back and forward through time? And I don't know if it was it this last episode. It was one of the episodes where it's in the future, and there was a Ferengi just on board the Enterprise, you know, like at navigation or whatever. Or it could have been a dream, or it could have been, what's his name, Nog, because Nog joined the Federation too. So I don't know.
I bet that Ferengi was just waiting to whip out his laser whip.
Yes.
We don't see nearly enough laser whip. There was a Lower Decks episode where there was a laser whipping someone.
What was the one? I can't remember what it was. It's like, I reserve the right to whip you. What was it? It was,
I don't know.
It was like, my rule of acquisition is to whip you. It was something dumb like that that made us both laugh. Yeah.
It should also be mentioned that there, in this episode, Ransom comes back from Ferenginar with a bottle of Loban Larger.
I missed that completely. I probably remember Loban Larger. Okay, no, that's good. Okay. By the way, later Freeman disposes of the Vassari bust. So they gave him, the Admiral a bust. And Ransom commends the officers on their unique experiences. Boimler, arrested for his antics, is taken into custody as Ransom watches amused. Boimler didn't have any antics.
That feels completely fake, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There were no antics, because that was the whole point. Boimler didn't do anything.
He did nothing, yeah.
Yeah. The crew's experiences on Ferenginar highlight cultural differences and challenge their assumptions, fostering a better understanding between the Federation and the Ferengi. Awesome. Okay, that was the last paragraph. But no, the Boimler part, it's not important to anything. Yeah. But this is what I was talking about. Like, the Ferengi are all about profit and capital and all of this, and that's all we know about the Ferengi. But it was really fun and funny for me that on Ferengi television, the most popular show is a show where everyone is secretly in love with each other but doesn't say anything. And it's this super addicting thing, and it has nothing to do with profit or business or anything. But it's funny that Ferengi love that, and it's funny that Boimler loves the show that the Ferengi love, and yeah.
Yeah, and Ransom is proud of Boimler for disobeying rules or for just wasting his assignment time. I don't know.
This is the season of Ransom being proud of people for weird things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was Parth Ferengi's heart place.
Okay. Did you laugh?
I did. Oh, I told you when I laughed, when Miglio won the Homebreaker. Oh,
that's when you laughed. Okay. Yeah. No, this is where I laughed.
Okay.
And that's when I think it was the Admiral says to Rom, well, Mr. Grand Nagus, and then Rom says, it's just Nagus. And then the Admiral says, okay, Nagus. And then Rom says, Grand Nagus.
Yes, okay. Very good.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, by the way, one thing of canon here. Apparently, the Cerritos is sent to investigate Ferenginar and its tourist attractions because it is the horniest ship, officially, in Starfleet.
Cerritos is?
Yeah, the Cerritos is the horniest ship, and there are no Marrieds. And so,
there's no Marrieds.
And so that was like the safest ship to send them into this mission.
Okay, sounds good. All right. Okay, so are we ready for a few badgies more?
A few badgies more, sure.
Is this our third experience with badgie?
I thought it was the second, but if you say third.
Is this only the second? I swear this is the third.
Probably is.
So there's two stories here. I guess I'll start reading and then I'll interrupt. Okay.
Okay.
In the Kala system, Drukmani scavengers discover Sam Rutherford's cybernetic implant, activating the rogue AI badgie. Badgie attaches to the Drukmani captain's face. That's right. He totally, what's my note here, that he salvages that man's face. Badgie attaches to this face, taking control. Meanwhile, Badgie and Drukmani witness a Nova One ship destroying a Bynar vessel, and Badgie plans to use the incident in a scheme. On the USS Cerritos, Rutherford's grappler experiment goes awry. That's right. They're practicing grappling.
Yeah.
Grabbing Devana Tandy, Okay. Captain Freeman briefs the crew about a distress signal from a Bynar ship. Tenny's assigned to the Daystrom Institute, and Boimler is called by Adjamus for Bynar-related intel. Okay, so I guess there's a lot of stuff getting investigated here. So they go to the Daystrom Institute, and I guess Adjamus and Peanut Hamper have, like, they got a serious friendship going on, and they've plotted to escape. And one of the things that's not mentioned here is that Adjamus has learned how to turn his red light into a blue light to make it look like he's gone good.
He's good, yeah.
It takes a lot of effort, but he's able to do that. Yeah. Let's see. At the Daystrom Institute, Adjamus and Peanut Hamper plan an escape while Tandy and Boimler secretly work to free themselves. Adjamus reveals a plot to conquer Plymeria, manipulated by Peanut Hamper. In Bynar space, the Cerritos encounters the Drukmani ship controlled by Badgy. Badgy attacks using Starfleet knowledge. Rutherford's emotional plea causes Badgy to split into two, Gudgy and Logicky. Okay, well, that's getting a little ahead. So Badgy splits into Badgy and Gudgy, mm-hmm. right? And then, let's see. I need to make sure I get this right. Okay, Rutherford. Okay, I think Rutherford tries to hug Badgy. And then Badgy splits into Gudgy and Badgy.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. And then, what's her name? Talin probably says something logic-y to Gudgy. Yeah.
Badgy tries, or Rutherford tries to logic Badgy. I think it's Rutherford.
Okay.
So he tried hugging, and now he's trying logic. And so Badgy has split into logic-y, and now Badgy doesn't have to be logical, right? So he extracted the logical part of Badgy, and so Badgy now has no more good in him or logic in him. And so they've kind of removed any constraints, and now he's just pure Badgy, right? And he's going to destroy everyone in the entire Federation. Rutherford's emotional plea causes Badgy to split into two holograms. Badgy unleashes neurozine gas on the Cerritos, but it's stopped when Rutherford convinces him to spare the crew. On Plymeria, Tendi tracks Peanut Hamper, and Boimler learns Adjamus's true intentions. The exocomps reveal their genuine friendship, and Boimler lets Adjamus spend time with Peanut Hamper before returning him to the Daystrom Institute. Badgy, gaining control over the Federation systems, plans genocide but transforms into a benevolent being appreciating all life. He relinquishes control, ascends to a higher plane, and encounters the Great Koala. This is the second time we've seen the Great Koala, yeah, John.
That's interesting.
Because when Boimler died, he saw the Great Koala.
Yeah.
At Daystrom, Adjamus vows to improve his behavior. He shares information about the mysterious ship-stealing vessels. Rutherford returns to Cerritos with Gudgy, while Boimler gets stuck to the bulkhead by the grappler. Okay, so with Adjamus, I guess like Peanut Hamper has finally decided she feels bad about all the bad things she did, but she just didn't want to disappoint Adjamus, so she went along with his plans to rule the world or whatever. And then Adjamus was just trying to impress her, and when they both realize that they don't really care that much about ruling the world as long as they can hang out with each other, then they both turn good. He turns good for real. Blue light and everything. Mm-hmm. And when he gets back to the Daystrom Institute, all the other evil computers are like, can you teach us how to be good? And, you know, so we're about to have so many benevolent computers as long as they remain happy or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
That's this episode. I laughed once.
A lot of packed stuff in this episode. I don't have a note of laughter, but I will say... Okay, I will – no, I have one, I think, that I'm just going to, in hindsight, say. And I'll just say it really quick. When they were testing out Rutherford's grapple, and I think Boimler is holding an apple up and just wincing. Yeah. He's just, like, wincing because he's, like, the grapple is theoretically supposed to get the apple out of his hand. And it's probably going to kill him, right? But the grapple is way off, and it just – I think it just mauls Mariner instead, pins her against the wall, and she's, like, 10 feet away.
Okay, so I can, as I'm reading this, it doesn't sound that funny, but there's a time I think Adjamus says, you can trust Blue Light Adjamus. Blue Light Adjamus wants to help, and whatever it was, maybe that's my comment, maybe that's not a quote, but something in that moment made me laugh, so that's a thing that I laughed at. I'm surprised I didn't laugh at another moment, which will come up in awards.
Okay, but you have it written down.
Yeah.
Okay, we can do caves now. We're almost done.
Hey, look at us. Let's see. Okay, pulling up my own fancy notes. Go for it, John.
I wrote down that I didn't like this episode.
That is so funny. Okay.
Okay. Of course. Okay. Well, you just shared something too soon.
That I think you're funny.
Oh, boy. Okay, caves. The USS Cerritos crew, including Beckett Mariner, Brad Boimler, Sam Rutherford, and Devani Tendi. Okay, AI is just trying to fill words now. It's using first and last names.
I know.
is on a research mission to study moss on Grotinus. The excitement fades when they realize their mission involves exploring a cave. Mariner, anticipating trouble, urges them to finish quickly. A cave-in traps them, and Mariner, unsurprised, suggests calling for hidden creatures to attack them. Rutherford's implant provides light, revealing the sentient moss. Phaser blasts are ineffective against it, and the moss starts following Mariner. Boimler recalls an incident with Lieutenant Steve Levy, and the story shifts to Chiron 4, where Boimler and Levy were stuck during an ion storm. They encountered Vendorians, and Levy's conspiracy theories became crucial in passing a Vendorian morality test. Back in the cave, Boimler suggests using Trigamonite to counter the moss. Rutherford recalls an incident on Balkus 9 where he and T'Ana encountered a Graflax. T'Ana performed a cesarean section on Rutherford, leading to the birth of a baby Thusa. The Graflax eventually helped them escape, bonding with Rutherford and T'Ana. In the present, Mariner, Boimler, and Rutherford argue about undisclosed experiences. Mariner reveals her encounter with a chronoton-emitting mineral on Glish and how she aged rapidly. Boimler and Rutherford express disappointment at her unshared experiences, but Mariner retaliates, demanding they leave the cave. However, the moss comes alive, preventing their exit until Tendi shares her story. Tendi recounts her first day on, because this whole episode, Tendi's like, we should talk about that time we were in the Jeffries tube or something, right? Yeah. We were somewhere else. And like, it's not a cave, so we're not talking about it.
Yeah.
Her first day of the ship, highlighting a turbolift incident where the crew was stuck due to damage from a rage virus. The humorous tale brings laughter, and the moss, satisfied, releases them, expressing a desire to be friends and allowing further scans. So I'll just ask here. Tendi's story, was that what you laughed at during this episode?
No.
Because the moss liked it.
The moss liked it, yeah.
Okay.
The moss is easily satisfied.
Yeah. As they continue scanning, Vendorians disguised as stalactites reveal the entire incident was a friendship test. Yeah, pretty much like that conspiracy guy, yeah. Emphasizing the crew's bond despite new responsibilities. The Vendorians contemplate lowering the communication blocker, letting the crew enjoy their time. Okay, that's all it says.
That's caves, huh?
Yeah.
Pretty lame.
Well, it's just...
It's just four cave stories.
It's just four cave stories. And so I was like, I'm already watching seven other episodes.
Now it's like 11.
And now it's 11, yeah. Yeah. So I think it just kind of annoyed me for that reason.
Yeah, and were you shocked that this episode was actually 2 hours long?
yeah, no, I was shocked, but it felt a little and you know the whole time they were like, we're not talking about that story, Tendi, and I was just kind of like, let Tendi tell the story and let the episode be over.
There's a moment that I chuckled at where someone, they were talking about gammonite or trigamonite, and someone said gammonite and trigamonite are nothing alike, right? So, but whatever. Let's see. Rutherford was the one with the cave adventure with T'Ana, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then like the Graflack did like impregnated Rutherford with face sex, right?
Right. Yeah, he was like... Yeah. So it was another male pregnancy in the Star Trek.
Yeah, and then he had a baby. And T'Ana says she hates babies worse than engineers, but then in the end she loves that baby. Okay, so that was, yeah.
I did write, young guy's leg falls off. I can't remember what
John,
was going on there.
That is the single funniest thing that has happened in this entire season.
Okay. I think I was laughing, so I just hurried and jotted it down, but I wasn't sure exactly what it was.
Well, we will get there.
Okay, great. Great. I can't wait to hear what happened because I know it was very surprising. I do recall that.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well there's the moss and then there's the Vendenigmaners.
Yeah.
Vendorians and the moss, yeah. So they were in a cave and they made people tell stories and then there were more stories we had to remember, so whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't have any other LOLs written down, so that's fine. I did write down a cold open.
Did that one have a cold open?
Maybe I think I just wrote down cold, but I didn't cross it out because I think something already started.
Oh no, the okay. Okay, this is caves. The boy we're preparing for research mission, the whole the cave to research Monster Cave, Mariner hates caves. Oh no, the cold open is just the it's just like they just preview what's about to happen.
Okay.
Right. It's just like they're on an away mission together. They get to the cave and Mariner's like, I hate caves so much. And then they get caved in and they're stuck in the cave and it's a cave episode.
Oh, right.
That's the whole
thing. I hate caves. Yeah. I should have written down that it wasn't because I hate caves written, but I'm like, oh, that can't be the cold open because all the cold opens was Slave One destroying the ships. But I guess not in this case. That's fine.
Well, okay, here we are. The inner fight.
Yeah. The kind of the first of two.
Yes. A two parter, I will say. Okay, so let's read this. On Perseoff 9? Is that how you say that?
Yes.
Oh, a little bit of puke in my mouth. Okay, here we go.
Great.
Brad Boimler, Talin, and Beckett Mariner find themselves on a mission involving venomous tremble lizards. Mariner, bored, disregards safety protocols, leading to chaos and another rescue operation. Back on the USS Cerritos, Captain Freeman assigns Boimler and Talin a seemingly mundane mission to distract Mariner. Basically, their job is to protect her, so they take her on the most boring mission possible, right?
Yeah.
The crew learns of a mysterious ship attacking former Starfleet personnel, focusing on targets like Seven of Nine and Beverly Crusher. And so they've been asked to, this is me editorializing. They've been asked to like escort like a Star Trek legend, right? And there's these really cool legends that they could escort, but they get to escort Nick Locarno. And I don't remember who that is.
Okay, good. No, this is important. This is a big Star Trek thing. And I know we talked about this probably about 11 or 12 years ago. Okay. Probably more, actually. I think it was much more than that. Nick Locarno is played by, I forgot his name, but he's the guy who plays Paris in
Voyager. That makes sense because Rutherford keeps saying, he looks just like Tom Paris.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, enough already. Stop saying that.
He was the guy in... Okay. Good thing we don't have any listeners because I might mess some of this up. But he was the guy who was, I think, in like Wesley's class at the academy. And he, for graduation, he wanted to do something spectacular. And it was this thing where the ships do this maneuver where they ignite their fuel and it forms this shape of fireworks. But they didn't do it right. It was an accident. And like one of the cadets died from it. And there was this big trial and everything.
Oh, the starburst maneuver.
Something like that. Yeah, and so, he was, dismissed and it's like this shameful thing. And everyone kind of learned to follow the rules and buck up and fly right at the end of the
episode. When we watched that episode, where was Mariner?
She was in the academy, right? Like, yeah, according to this, which kind of, I don't think this makes sense with the timeline, because I thought Lower Decks was as far away from the episode, like, as when they originally aired. Like, Lower Decks takes place 30 years after Next Generation, because it's taken place 30 years after our Next Generation, right? And everybody in Next Generation is that much older, I thought.
You know, based on their uniforms, I always thought this was pretty close in time with the Next Generation.
So maybe it is just right with Generation, but I don't know. I thought it makes sense to me that it would be, because it's not Picard time. So it's between Next Generation and Picard time.
Yeah, and I mean, you have Rom, right, from Ferengi, Rom the Ferenginar.
Right, but I mean, if Rom took over Ferenginar at the end of Next Generation, I mean, it's reasonable to think that he might still be in charge, but maybe not. Yeah. I don't know. But the thing is, so the guy, Robert Duncan McNeil, the actor, that's his name. I remembered his name.
Yeah.
When they cast Voyager, they wanted to have that same character, Locarno.
Okay.
Because it would be interesting. It's like, okay, he's this disgraced person, but he is a really good pilot, so he's just kind of earning his way back. And that's like the character of Tom Paris in Voyager, which we only caught a glimpse of. And they got the same guy to play him, but they changed his name. I think they changed his name and invented a new character so they wouldn't have to pay the original writer royalties like for creating that character.
Wow, that's awesome.
Right. Yeah. So pretty much that's why Tom Paris is exactly like this guy and it's played by the same guy, but they're like, okay, we'll just change his name.
Hmm.
So that's Locarno. That's the backstory of Locarno.
That's Locarno. Okay.
Yeah.
So So we have our crew that's trying to protect Mariner, and they're on an away mission to deal with like some weather satellite near Sherbal 5. But it turns out that they have to crash land on Sherbal 5. And when they get there, they find that there's like one person from each race that hates each other, all the different space species that hate each other.
Yeah.
And they're constantly in almost like combat time, right? And combat time is disrupted by the occasional knife rain. Like it rains knives or something. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, let me get back to reading this. Sent to the Sherbal system, Mariner, Boimler, Talin, and Tendi face unexpected challenges, attacked by a Klingon bird of prey. That's why they crash land. Mariner takes control of the shuttle, crash landing on Sherbal 5. Why do I have Sherbal 4? It's Sherbal 5. I'm just dumb. As they navigate the dangerous terrain, they encounter Jem, Vrek, and a cloaked figure, leading to a chaotic situation. Meanwhile, Captain Freeman and the crew deal with intrigue on New Axton, twice as dangerous as Old Axton, or twice as lawless, I think is what they say, right?
Yeah.
Trying to locate pilot-for-hire Nick Locarno. The away team on Sherbal 5 discovers that Jem... So AI does this differently than you and I would do it, because you and I would handle one plot at a time, and this just like keeps going back and forth, back and forth.
Right. It's learning, or maybe it's past our learning.
Whatever. Okay. The away team on Sherbal 5 discovers that Jem and Vrek are working against the cloaked figure Ma'a, who was betrayed by his crew. The crew hides in a tree for shelter, and Mariner opens up about her complicated relationship with Starfleet, revealing her reluctance for promotion and her desire to be an ensign like her late friend Sito. Ma'a challenges her perspective, emphasizing the importance of honoring Sito's sacrifices by embracing her career. So she's all broken up because her friend died, but also she's freaking out because her big complaint seems to be that Starfleet is supposed to be about science and exploration and not fighting. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that's what she's upset about, right?
And so she fights to protest.
And so she fights. So it doesn't make a ton of sense, right?
Right.
And I think we have we have a line here where the guy... Oh, by the way, there's a Cardassian on this planet too. So there's kind of everyone. Mm-hmm. But our Klingon friend tells her that you need to honor your friend, slay your enemies, and study your plants, right? So that's a pretty good line.
Now, really quick, I want to make sure we bring Sito into this, because that's another thing that it connected together. And I should have researched this. I didn't, because I obviously didn't even read these summaries in advance. I'm going to sneeze.
Oh, bless you.
I'm obviously getting sick, huh? Oh, man.
Yeah, I felt sick at work today. I almost
brutal. Went home. Okay. Man. No, but this connects to really big Next Generation episodes, because Sito, I think she was in the episode with Locarno. I think she was one of the other cadets with Wesley. But in the episode of Next Generation called Lower Decks, that's, you know, the famous one, and that's the last season. It's season 7. She was the one who they had her volunteer to like go undercover as like some Bajoran refugee or something, and she died on that mission. The Cardassians killed her. So that's connecting all these Next Generation episodes together into this. Okay. And it's kind of fitting that they used Lower Decks, the episode.
Yeah. Well, the knife rain ends, and the Klingon and Mariner are supposed to fight again, but she just gives him a big hug.
Yeah.
She gives that guy a big hug, right? Yeah. And then it looks like all the people on this planet are about to fight again. I'll get back to the dumb AI. All the people on the planet are about to fight again, but Tendi stops and she's like, I'm the queen of the constellation of the Winter Mistress, or whatever she is, right? Mm-hmm. And so she disrupts them just in time for our friend Mariner to be beamed up. Where'd she go? Mm-hmm. Right. And also, I have a note that said, did that Klingon eat the other Klingons? So I don't know why I wrote that. Something must have happened. Anyway, back to this dumb thing. The away team on Sherbal 5
discovered there were any other Klingons, because the Klingon ship was the one that was still in orbit, but he was on. I don't want to risk it, because I'm not sure what you may have meant, sure. And I probably misremember it.
Yeah, who knows? So I have on New Axon, Freeman's attempt to gather information on the Cardinal leads to an unexpected revelation. The mysterious figure pursuing the crew is none other than Andy Billups, revealing the success of Freeman's ploy to manipulate biases. Man, this skips so much. Back on Triple Five, the crew, including Maob, decides to work together after learning that other Ensigns betrayed their captains. As they plan to escape, Mariner gets teleported away by the mysterious ship, discovering Nick Locarno inside, hinting at trouble to come. The episode is filled with unexpected twists, complex character revelations, and the promise of future challenges as the crew faces new adversaries and internal conflicts. So here's the deal. On New Axton, Freeman goes into this bar and she meets one of those aliens from an early episode of TOS that it turns out like it was just like a statue or a puppet or something.
Yes.
And she grabs it and shakes it. And it's actually like a little person. And he's like, I was going to give you the info, but now I'll just sell it to this bounty hunter. And of course, that bounty hunter turns out to be Phillips. So Freeman always finds herself in these situations where it seems like she is bumbling along, but she always like has the long con. She knows what she's doing. Yeah. So she got that. But anyway, this did have a – it had – okay. So I laughed two times in this episode.
Okay.
One was when the guy said, Starfleet thinks they can shake anyone they want. I thought that was so funny. And then there's a moment where Boimler sits down on that planet and takes off his shoes and he's got sticks in his boots. I don't know why that was so funny to me, but I mean, you get pebbles in your boots, but his boots were full of sticks. So
okay.
I thought that was really funny.
I'm not sure if this is a reference or not, but they get kicked out of MUDs. And Mud is the character from the original series who's, you know, he's this pirate sleazoid guy. Sure. And they get kicked out of Mud's, and so they have to go to Zorky's where the intel isn't as good, you know.
Yeah.
Like, everyone in town knows that, you know.
That's right.
The intel isn't as good at Zorky's. And I'm not Zorky's might be a thing, but I can't remember what Zorky's is. But it's not as prominent of a character as Mud, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to bring something up because there's something I didn't understand about this episode. Like, they said, okay, the mysterious ship is attacking former Starfleet personnel like Seven of Nine and Beverly Crusher. But they're like, oh, we got to protect Seven of Nine and Beverly Crusher. So, like, I don't know how they know. There's no precedent. There's no example of Starfleet of it attacking former Starfleet personnel. I guess everyone in Starfleet that this mysterious ship attacked, they don't name because they're like, yeah, it's like Seven of Nine and Beverly Crusher, but it's not them because we're going to go protect them, but we're not really. Yeah.
It's like Beverly Crusher level people, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We know it's like, we're not going to say who they are, but they're Beverly famous. Crusher level. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it is kind of interesting. I like how Locarno is he's gathering an army of Lower Decks, I suppose, because these are all Lower Decks people that are, you know, signing off into his little army.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey,
you might as well talk about old friends, new planets. That's what this is all about.
Okay. Yeah, I think
Oh, my gosh. The AI.
Really?
The AI's first sentence. Where on earth does that come from?
Okay, I gotta scroll down. What does this say? Okay, you might be. It may have skipped. You may have skipped some because. Oh, right. What is that? Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
In this episode titled
Kobayashi Maru. You had one thing. I gave you one bit of information. That's the title of the episode, and you got that wrong. Okay. The story unfolds both in the past and the present. 13 years ago at Starfleet Academy, Nova Squadron, featuring promising pilots like Nick Locarno and Joshua Albert, plans a risky and banned maneuver called the Culverd Starburst. The tension builds as they face uncertainty about their futures after graduation. In the present, so that's a little, yeah, we kind of mentioned that. In the present, Mariner finds herself on Nova 1, Locarno's ship, as he reveals his intention to embarrass Starfleet and establish Nova Fleet. Captain Freeman on the USS Cerritos is informed that Locarno is responsible for attacks on non-Federation ships, but is restrained by political considerations. As Locarno broadcasts a message across the Alpha Quadrant, Mariner confronts him, steals the Ferengi Genesis device, and triggers a series of events leading to a showdown. So it's kind of cool. The Ferengi developed a Genesis device that's much smaller, which is kind of cool. Yeah, like we saw it a few days ago, a few episodes ago.
Yep.
Locarno was kind of an idiot, though. He did not brainwash Mariner or tie her up or, you know, put a gag over her mouth or anything. He was in the middle of convincing her, you know, like mid-sentence when he does his like big broadcast, and she's just still standing right there. Right, because this is where she says, this guy's, what does he say? This guy sucks, is what she says.
Yeah, he totally thinks that Mariner wants to be there, but he hadn't even finished his pitch to her, and so yeah.
I mean, it does remind me a lot of Return of the Jedi when, you know, Luke has the fight with Darth Vader and like the Emperor's like thinking he's going to join him after that. I don't know. Seems like you need, I mean, Emperor, I know you're getting old and everything, but you groomed Anakin for years, right? Like years. It's not going to take an instant for Luke to join.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was thinking. Okay. On the USS Cerritos, Captain Freeman defies Starfleet orders to rescue Mariner. The crew receives a derelict spaceship from the Orion Syndicate, setting the stage for an unconventional plan.
How do they get that ship? This completely glosses over that.
This is really big. Okay, because it has
actually,
to do
actually, the next
with
paragraph. With I see the next paragraph.
Oh, does it say? Yeah. Okay, we'll just do that. Meanwhile, Mariner, pursued by Nova Fleet, navigates an icy ring system and encounters unexpected challenges. Okay, that was a good summary.
Icy ring system.
she encounters unexpected challenges.
In an icy ring system? It's like it's a shielded place and you can't break through the shield because I can't remember what it's a Trinar tech, not Binar tech.
Trinar
shield, yeah.
In a parallel storyline on Orion. Okay, see now, look, AI's learning because they're doing it like we do. They just do it out of order.
Sure.
In a parallel storyline on Orion, Erica Tendi demands the surrender of the USS Cerritos through a bizarre barter by combat. Freeman's chosen champion, Dr. Maglimo, I love this, faces a surprising turn of events in a battle against a formidable opponent. As the crew of the Cerritos works on their plan, Mariner's predicament escalates with a Romulan starship joining the chase. Okay, that shouldn't have been in that paragraph. They're just mixing a bunch of stuff. Okay, but I do remember this. It's the barter by combat. Dr. Maglimo is the worst person for the combat, but Tendi knew. Sorry. Oh my gosh. Tendi knew that the big giant Orion guy was allergic to Maglimo, but he still lost because he was allergic. He caused an allergic reaction like I'm having now, and then he fell on Maglimo and crushed Maglimo, seemingly to death.
Bless you. It was a robot jocks moment, right?
It was. It totally was a robot jocks moment.
John, you need to get a drink of water or take a minute.
In a daring move, Captain Freeman breaches the supposedly impenetrable Trinar shield to rescue Merritt. Locarno's unstable leadership becomes evident, leading to a dissent among the members of Nova Fleet. The crew of the Cerritos manages to create a breach in the shield, enabling Freeman to rescue Mariner, but Locarno remains defiant. Ultimately, Mariner's plea to save Locarno falls on deaf ears, and the Genesis device is activated. The resulting explosion creates a new planet named Locarno. While facing repercussions for her insubordination, Captain Freeman manages to open diplomatic relations with the Orions. The episode concludes with the crew reuniting, Tendi bidding an emotional farewell to return to Orion, and hints of future challenges for the USS Cerritos and its crew. So my big question is, so is Tendi leaving the show? Is that what they're saying?
At least momentarily. You never know what Lower Decks is going to do. They might have her back at the end of the next episode.
There are a bunch of season premieres where it's like, okay, remember how last season ended? We're going to solve it in 2 seconds.
Yep. So I love that they do that because I love it. But so, yeah, the deal right was that even though they lost the barter by combat, she said, I will come back to the family if you just give my friends a ship. And they give them like a ship that doesn't work. So they have to like slingshot it at the shield.
It's
and once
really
again,
just a really big rock is what they get.
Yes. Ramming technology beats all in the Star Trek world.
Yeah.
So
going on
there. Now she's gone, and so no more not quite sex in the Jeffries tubes with Rutherford, I guess, for a while. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, I didn't laugh during that episode, John.
Let's see here. I put. I laughed when Locarno said, "Okay, I'm gonna do my big, you know, galaxy-wide broadcast now." And he flips his view screen on, and like Mariner is just like, "What?" You know, and she's just kind of looking around, like, "I didn't mean to be on camera just now."
Well, there, I laughed at you talking about it. So.
Oh, good, good. There we go.
That's a half a laugh, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
all right.
Yeah, chuckling.
Hey.
Okay.
We just finished the whole season.
Yeah, we did. Well, we had help, I guess. Computers.
Does this feel like the good old days? We just did 8 episodes in about 1 hour.
I don't know how we did old Star Trek episodes like that in 1 hour. I think a lot of them were like, I don't remember this one. I think this is what happened, and then we just moved on. We didn't have awards or anything back then either.
We had like 3 awards. It was, I don't know. We did something, but it was meager. Like our first... Yeah. So the first, because I've got like sheets of awards saved on my hard drive from years back, and the very first ones, it's like meager. It's like,
yeah.
And which episode did you like the most? And yeah. Anyway, we have grown, and it's been great, right? So, All right, you have no episode awards, so you have to listen to mine.
Right, I don't have episode awards. I might have some season awards.
Yes, and then when you're done listening to my episode awards, I think it's incumbent upon you to still rank these 8. So just poll. Okay.
Yeah.
Pull the 2 out, okay?
I can do that. Yeah.
Okay, and then we'll rank them all. So, okay, for these episodes, my favorite crew member is Boimler. Sure, why not? He got sticks in his boots, so he deserves something. So, okay. My favorite guest, whoever plays Parth, he's not a concierge, he's a hug-cierge.
Oh, that's right.
So, he's like that. Concierge. Recurring character, it's always going to be Jeffrey Combs. So, Tech. My favorite technology is from the inner fight where the Rutherford discovers that their uniforms have pockets.
That's right.
Pocket technology. I'm also a big fan of Adjamus being able to change his light despite his evil or good intentions so he can fake his light.
Right.
My villain, the Vendorians and their filthy morality tests.
Let's see.
My hero, Billups, pretending to be the bounty hunter on New Axton. That was kind of weak, but what can you do? Uh-huh. My favorite planet, New Axton, because it's twice as lawless as Old Axton. My favorite food, I guess the whalebone. It's a drink, but I don't remember a lot of other food. Although, no, you know what? Let's see. You did have Boimler and the guy who loves conspiracy theories. And they were being feasted by the Vendorians. So whatever the Vendorians fed them, I guess that's probably better than a 6-foot-long beverage. So favorite name, Vexilon. Although De'Erica is pretty darn good.
Yes. It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Okay. Favorite title from these, Parth Ferengi's Heart Place. I kind of like that. John's favorite title is Caves. So my favorite death. Logiki was killed by Badgie. Badgie used a backbreaker and killed Logiki.
Okay.
That was pretty good. Okay. Favorite outfit, the Betazoid Intelligence Action Kits. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Let's see. Alien species. I guess the information broker that got shaken.
That's good. Okay. That's good. Because my favorite part about the alien is, I mean, he was like his mouth was just moving slowly. So It was a puppet. Like, what's the deal with that creature? Like, how could you even talk when your mouth is moving twice as slow as the words?
Okay, so honorable mention for quote, honor your friends, slay your enemies, study your planets. But my favorite quote is, Starfleet thinks they can shake anybody they want. And then my favorite joke was the whole compound fracture that was healing weird while aging. I thought that was just really good. Okay, favorite cold open, I guess when Badgie salvaged that poor guy's face.
Okay.
Most of the other cold opens were just like, you know, the arc, right?
Right.
Okay, there's that. And then favorite Star Trek callback, no Starfleet carpets or wood paneling on Locarno's ship, doggone it. Mm-hmm. So that's that. All right, John, we got to rank these. So why don't you start? What's your 8th favorite?
Okay, so it's just of the podcast, not of
just the podcast.
Okay, my 8th favorite, Caves.
Okay, number 8 for me, Old Friends, New Planets. number 7 coming around to In the Cradle of Vexilon.
Okay, my number 7 is In the Cradle of Vexilon.
Ooh, okay, keep going.
Okay, my number 6 is Something Borrowed, Something Green.
Okay, my number 6 is A Few Badgies More. My number 5 is In Pathological Fallacies.
My number 5 is A Few Badgies More. My number 4 is The Inner Fight.
Okay, my number 4 is The Inner Fight. My number 3 is Parth Ferengi's Hard Place.
My number 3 is Old Friends, New Planets. And my number 2 is Empathological Fallacies.
My number 2 is Something Borrowed, Something Green. Come on. My number 1 is Caves.
Why is it your number 1?
Because that one was so funny. It was so funny. It wasn't even close. Like, not another, there was not a single joke this whole season that even was close to as funny as that. And I liked the I liked several of the stories. I liked the story.
It's as funny as Boimler. The joke you haven't mentioned yet, right?
Sure. Boimler and what's his head? I thought theirs was good too. The conspiracy guy. And then at the end, we're like, oh, good, you're friends. So, morality, like, they just rejoiced over the morality test winning or whatever. But it was basically the Boimler was like, okay, I guess I don't hate you as much as I thought. And then that was enough for the Vendorians, who were like just ecstatic, right? So I don't know. I really love Caves. I love the 4 short stories. I thought it was lots of fun. But
because a weird thing I have with Lower Decks is, I don't know. I'm kind of thinking the episodes are too short. They're so short. That I can't remember what happens, and they're so packed full of stuff that it's hard for me to podcast about it.
Yeah.
And so to like make them shorter and more dense, I guess I think it's easier for me to tune out, which is weird.
Yeah.
I know that doesn't make any sense. Okay, well you don't want to know what my number one is.
Go ahead. What is it?
Parth Ferengi's Heart Place.
Very good. That's great. That's a great episode.
Is it great?
Do you not like it anymore?
No. It is great. But actually, the reason I picked that is for the... Well, I'll get to it in my season award, but something I'll be repeating.
Okay. Well, hey, you ready to do some season awards?
Not really.
Well, let's give it our best shot.
Okay.
Who's your most improved crew?
My most improved crew... Where is it? I have Talin.
Vulcan. That's a good choice.
Yeah.
Okay, so mine's Rutherford. I've kind of always been lukewarm about him. I guess he improves. He moves the needle a little bit on this season. So, well, who's your most deproved crew?
Okay, and this is a conversation I want to have.
Okay.
It's Tendi. And
that's not a bad pick.
Yeah, and I'm picking her because I'm like, okay, you know what? If she's on the way out, I am
we'll punish her.
The statement and stance. Okay. She belongs out because she's the same person as Rutherford. She's too much. She's too much this ideal of Lower Decks where they're, really confident, competent, and really enthused to be there. And Tendi is so much that. And that's kind of the whole attitude that Lower Decks has. And I think they did that attitude way too much. And Talin, on the other hand, did they have this season to slowly replace like one quadrant of the show in Tendi with this logical Vulcan who I feel is kind of might be a breath of fresh air as far as like the 4 main leads go?
Could be. Well, John, we'll have to see.
Yeah. And okay and I'm gonna say this right now. Okay, sorry, we're doing this major interrupting because I was thinking about this today. A thing that really bugs me about Lower Decks is I recently, because I'm listening to a podcast called Tracking Through Time and Space, where they're watching Star Trek for the first time. I'm like, this will bring me back to when we did this. And they just watched the episode called Hollow Pursuits, and it's the episode – it's kind of the original Lower Decks episode that's not Lower Decks. It's the one about Reginald Barclay, how he doesn't get along with anybody in the crew, and he's incompetent, and he spends a lot of time on the holodeck, while everyone else on the Enterprise is super competent and never spends time on the holodeck and only thinks about their job all the time. That's what I want Lower Decks to be about. People who are insecure around really impressive Starfleet people. I kind of am sick of Lower Decks being like Tendi and Boimler and Rutherford and Mariner, they're super, super amazing. And I'm kind of sick of them being amazing at everything they do. I want them to fail more.
Well, yeah. Okay. So we can look forward to more failure, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So my most deproved crew, since we're back to the awards.
Yes.
Is Ta'ana. And it's, I feel bad about that, but it's just, my problem is not her. It's not enough her.
Not enough cat.
Yeah. Not enough cat.
Yeah.
Okay.
We could use that.
Well, who's your favorite guest from this season, John?
Okay, I'm pretty sure I recognized her voice, but Rachel Dratch played one of the Betazoid women, I think.
Oh, okay.
You know, she's Debbie Downer.
Oh, okay. All right. Did you know that cat AIDS is like the second highest cause of death among felines? Okay, so my favorite guest is whoever played Parth the Hugsierge. So I didn't take the effort to find the actor's name. Apologies.
Okay. Do we have to do a worst guest?
Well, I did. It's Nick Locarno. Moving on.
Okay. I can pick that one, yeah.
Your favorite recurring character?
Okay. By the way, I'm combining this with Star Trek callback in a way.
Okay.
But my favorite recurring character is only mentioned, and that's Sito.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Sito who, you know, causes Mariner to go crazy. Yeah. Because she died.
Okay. Let's see. That's your recurring character.
Yeah.
My best recurring character is Agamus, played by Jeffrey Combs. My worst is Badgie. I think I'm tired of Badgie. And like the end of that episode, by the way, just like, I'm going to destroy the universe, but then maybe I shouldn't. Okay, I won't.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a weird, abrupt ending. Who's your least favorite?
Right. No, that's correct. I wrote down Rom just to like give Rom some recognition, but I don't want to call him like, it's not,
you're recognizing him as bad.
yeah I mean, he gets an award. It's like accepting the Razzie, but Rom's not that bad. Badgie is way worse, but I specifically wanted to pick like a, because I when I think of recurring character, I'm like, I have to pick someone from old Star Trek. So I wanted to do it that way, but Badgie is the worst.
Yeah. Okay, John, what's your favorite tech?
Favorite tech? Well, this is easy. It's the Apple Grapple.
The Apple Grapple. Oh, that's really good.
Misses the apple, but like latches Mariner to the wall.
So I put pocket-sized Genesis device. It's pretty cool you can get it that small. Yeah.
Yeah.
My least favorite tech is Neelix cheese from back of the first episode, being Tuvix, Neelix cheese.
Okay.
Yeah. What about you? Worst tech?
Just the Agimus changing its light.
Okay. All right. What's your favorite villain?
Favorite villain is this is from the season, right? Okay. It's Moopsie.
Moopsie.
Yeah. Drinks bones. Yep. Yeah.
Well, the worst villain is Livik, and he's kind of Rutherford's evil like competitor.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Oh, I spread it. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, who's your favorite hero?
Let's go Locarno here.
That's your hero?
Oh, favorite hero.
Your worst villain is Locarno.
My worst villain is Locarno. Yeah, my hero. Sorry. Uh-huh. My hero is Ramming.
Ramming. My hero is Compound Fracture Guy. He toughs it out. That guy he keeps going. My worst hero is the Vendorians. They think they're heroes, but they're the worst.
Oh, they're judgy.
They're judgy.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What about you? Worst hero?
Tendi. I guess I'm going all in on just like au revoir, Tendi. Yeah.
You think you can leave? Well, guess what? Here's some awards for you. Okay. Well, what's your favorite planet?
Favorite planet is Sherbal.
Ah.
Because it's the funnest planet to say.
Yeah, it is. Okay. I picked Ryza. That's where the Betazoid Ragers were going.
Ragers, yeah.
Yeah. And you know that they're wild, right? They probably got invited to Ryza because everyone knows they're Ragers.
Yeah.
So, okay. What's the worst planet? I picked that zoo where Moopsie eats people.
Well,
eats
I guess
bones.
You wouldn't want to be there.
Yeah.
I guess I picked Ferenginar because it's old. But again, Ferenginar is better than you would think. They have they kind of have a lot of just objectively good stuff, and the TV is pretty good. So
yeah,
maybe I should have put that.
Okay, let's see. All right, what's your favorite food?
Betazoids.
That's a good pick. I put the Vendorian feast, but it should be Betazoids.
Yeah.
Okay. What about worst food? I've got Ransom's teeth. That they, I think she punches out Ransom's teeth and feeds them to Moopsie.
That's right. That's pretty good. I went with synthetic Betazoids.
Okay. They're not the real thing.
No.
Okay. What's your favorite name?
My favorite name is Lord Tyrannicillicus.
Oh, that's good. Is that from one of the first two episodes?
No. It's from the Agimus episode. I think it's one of the other like crazy computers. Crazy Lord Tyrannicillicus.
Well, I went with Vexilon. My least favorite name is Goodgy.
Goodgy's a bad name. Yeah. I should have thought of that. Yeah. Goodgy's not a good name, but I went with D'Erica.
D'Erica. I love that. D'Erica.
I kind of love it, but also like I wouldn't want to be named D'Erica.
Yeah. All right. What's your favorite title?
I have no bones yet. I must flee.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Is the worst title Caves?
No. The worst title is Parth Ferengi's Heart Place.
What?
Yeah.
What? That was almost my pick for my favorite.
Well, I don't know. I don't get it. It's just Parth Ferengi has a place, you know, like a heart place.
Yeah.
I mean, is it a play on word? Like, I think there's something I'm not getting.
Title. You're not getting it, and I'm not going to share it with you.
Okay.
Fine. Okay. Well, what's your favorite death?
Let's see. Narge? That's the person who got their bones drink or the creature?
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Was he like the vegetable creature?
Yeah. Okay. You drank my bones.
Okay. Well, I went with Boimler's first death was the best one. But then like his second death is my worst death. So they're both Boimler. So.
Okay.
Do you have a worst death?
For worst death, I couldn't remember. I wrote... Someone gets their eyes pulled out, but it was off screen. So I'm like, I wanted to see that. Mm. And I'm not sure exactly like what the context was, but it was in one of these first episodes, I think.
Mm.
Oh, man, the Kenny Rogers, Boimler's new room. We were saying, oh, is this a later episode? But it's I Have No Bones Yet, I Must Flee. That's when they have the Kenny Rogers room. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, sorry, I was just looking through my notes.
You're good.
Okay.
Do you have a favorite outfit?
Favorite outfit. I'm going to have to go with, I'm scanning.
While you're scanning, okay. I'm going with Shax and Ransom's workout outfits, and I Have No Bones Yet, I Must Flee.
Right. The workout outfits, I don't know if we talked about this, but that was a callback to Crusher and...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we talked about that. Yeah, Crusher and Troy had the same workout outfits.
Yep.
Talking about... girl talk. Yeah. Okay, let's see, what's her name? Mariner has these like cute shorts and a halter at one point. Come on, halter top. I think, you know, she was just like it was a she was on break or something and yeah, she started kicking people in that.
Okay. Well, my worst outfit is Tendi and Rutherford's sexy Parth Heart Place sexy wear.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't put it on, but anyway. All right. John, what about you? Do you have a worst outfit?
I think whatever Locarno is wearing is just kind of like...
Dude, Locarno is void.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite alien species?
Goodgy?
Okay. Well, I'm happy to welcome back the Cardassians.
Okay.
Yeah. My worst alien species is the Vendorians. Oh.
Oh, good. So sorry. Goodgy is my bad alien species.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay. What's your good alien
species? The good
species?
One is to Illips.
Okay.
The combination of Ta'ana and Billups.
Oh, yeah. All right. Your favorite cold open?
Favorite cold open. I think the one with the Romulans. There was one with Romulans, right?
Yeah. They're cleaning up Reman body parts post-torture.
Right. And I think they were like talking about, I will deceive you. No, I will deceive you. I have cunning or something. Yeah.
All right. What's your favorite joke for the whole season?
Okay. My favorite joke is... and it's why Parth Ferengi's Heart Place was my favorite of this section. And it's, Mr. Grand Nagus. Oh, it's just Nagus. Okay, Nagus. Grand Nagus.
Okay. Well, here's my favorite joke, and I'm going to make you listen to this whole darn thing, so
okay,
hold on.
Okay.
We need someone younger than us to take a crack at this.
Wait, that's it? Asif's like a child prodigy. He's young as hell.
Really?
Asif! Get your ass over here!
Hello, my leg is broken!
It'll heal with a time dilation, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Ow! Oh my god, my leg! Ow! Oh, it's healing wrong!
It looks fine!
Yeah, just keep going!
Are you sure?
Just walk through it,
go anymore. My leg feels like a knot.
Just suck it up. You're still young.
Yeah, come on, kid. I wish I was your age.
Oh, God, my leg fell off.
That's not good.
Really nice.
Okay. Oh. Okay, that's really good, but I do know why I didn't take good notes, because that was a lot of notes to take.
That was a lot. Yeah, so I think my favorite line from that whole part, though, was when he said, "It's healing wrong." Oh, man. Okay. All right. Well, John, did you have a favorite quote?
I think it's I have one better than this, I'm sure, but it's fresh on my mind, and I'm just going to repeat it. And I don't even know if this is accurate, but I feel like this is what she says when Locarno puts the screen on and he says, "Okay, Mariner, do you have a testimonial of me?" And she goes, "This guy sucks."
All right, here's my favorite quote.
Okay.
"So sorry. It's hard to tell who is and isn't a puppet.
I look nothing like a puppet. You know, I wasn't going to sell anyone information on Locarno, but you Starfleet people think you can just pick up and shake anyone you want.
No, I...
Now I will sell the information, just not to you."
That's Jeffrey Combs, isn't it?
I don't know. Do you know how often I'm going to say in the future, "You think you can pick up anyone and shake anyone you want?"
Yeah.
So that's just great. Very good. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. Favorite callback. I feel like I let myself seriously down on this one. I went with Starfleet carpets, but there had to be better callbacks than that. So you need to redeem this.
Well, I'm not redeeming it. And I kind of mentioned it before, but I think like the connecting of Locarno and Sito.
Okay.
So both of those, you know, because those were both old Lower Decks references. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. My least favorite callback is Alamarain, the Alamarain thingy.
Oh, okay. You did put that down as your least favorite. Okay. Yeah. Oh, well, I'm going to go with that too. Sorry. I'm just going to copy you. But we did agree, like at the beginning of the episode, it's like, okay, we're getting really deep into some non-memorable episodes here.
So time to do our season rankings. And really, these should be extraordinarily similar to what we just said.
They should be. I mean,
there's a couple of episodes to slide in here.
Okay. Yeah.
So what's your 10th favorite episode season?
Caves.
Caves. My number 10 is Old Friends, New Planets.
Okay.
So far, so good. Number 2, let's slip in Tuvix. What's your number nine?
Number 9.
Yeah, my number 9.
My number 9 is, okay, there it is. Okay. In the Cradle of Vexilon. And my number 8 is Something Borrowed, Something Green.
My number 8 is In the Cradle of Vexilon. My number 7 is A Few Badgies More.
My number 7 is A Few Badgies More.
Very good.
My number 6 is Tuvix.
My number 6 is Pathological Fallacies. My number 5 is I Have No Bones Yet I Must Flee.
Oh, okay. My number 5 is The Inner Fight. My number 4 is Old Friends, New Planets.
My number 4, The Inner Fight. My number 3, Parth Ferengi's Heart Place.
My number 3, I Have No Bones Yet I Must Flee. My number 2, Empathological Fallacies.
Number 2, Something Borrowed, Something Green. Number 1, of course, it's Caves.
Something Borrowed, Something Green was my 8th, and Caves was my 10th.
I know.
All right. Let's see. My number 1 is Parth Ferengi's Heart Place. Okay.
Yay! Just like we, you know,
planned
more or less mentioned 20 minutes
ago. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so that's it. Okay, Lower Decks is done. I don't know if there's been an announcement for another season or anything.
Yeah, here we go. So this is the big announcement, okay?
Right, okay.
So 5 months ago, 6 months ago, when we podcast the first 2 episodes of the season, John and I had a serious talk. So this is where we'll mention it, right? Where I mentioned that we were coming to the end of this podcast. And at the time, I promised John that I would see this thing through the final episode of Discovery.
Yes.
However, these last 6 months... It has been so hard to get up the will to podcast a show that I love, which is Lower Decks. I love it. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard to do it. And I don't know why. I can't come up with a single good reason why we didn't podcast this on time. And then thinking about it, I love this podcast. And I feel like I'm no longer doing right by the listeners of this podcast. And there's just multiple reasons. But also... I want this podcast to end on a really high note, and I don't think slogging through the final season of Discovery is going to serve that. So this, my friends, is the second to last episode of this podcast. I hereby give John permission to continue forth in any way he sees fit, but I am now saying that we will have a final 3-day tour or 3-hour tour, whatever you want to call it, wrap up, where we will discuss this whole big darn thing. And that will be the end of my journey. And it's been a pleasure, and I don't want to get all silly and sappy here, because we can do that on the final podcast. But sorry, folks, that's the announcement. It's been a real pleasure. It really, really has. And again, like I said, we'll talk about this more later. And maybe we can have some friends on for the final wrap up.
Maybe we can. Now, the sad thing, the saddest of all regarding that announcement, is you are way more on the ball as far as Star Trek stuff as I am. So are you sure you want to leave it to me, of all people, who used to love Star Trek as much as I did, enough to make you watch it all?
No, so honestly, like, I'm like, if you want to be what's her name from You're Wrong About?
Oh, what is her name?
I can't remember her
name. Is it Sarah Marshall?
If you want to be Sarah Marshall and keep going without Michael Hobbs, then that's fine. But I will say, like, if there's like a major event, then yeah, you know, we'll do something. But but this is it. As far as like talking about every episode of every show, like, we're done. And so, and I guess a good example would be, at some point in the near future, we're probably going to have William Shatner pass away, and that will be a excellent reason to revive this podcast for a special episode, and also maybe a collab effort with the In Memoriam podcast.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. We could probably, I mean, we have the technology. We could probably copy and paste that episode into the various feeds. Okay. Well, that's great and fine. We're going to have to plan ahead for that 3-hour thing, because every time we do it, it's such a bigger deal than I remember it being.
Yes, I do. I have a recommendation that we pare down the awards a little bit, because there's no way I can do research for the past 13 years of our podcast. I just there's no way. So we'll discuss it. But anyway, I just want to say, like, it's been a real pleasure. I've loved this podcast, and I think the best part about this podcast, the second best part about this podcast, is all the new friends that we've made. Like, we've met some great people that we still keep in touch with.
Turns out the friends we made along the way is the true end of the journey.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Now, okay. Well, you know, we could say, you know, this definitely isn't goodbye, because we could do what we just did and put off that final episode for several months.
Yeah.
So it never will. And that's probably what's going to happen. So,
yeah.
Who knows? All of our other podcasts, by the way, listen to Yours, Mine, and Theirs, and In Memoriam, and that Triangle podcast that Roy also does. yeah, listen up. Those may all end officially before JR watches Star Trek for the first time. So
before the finale.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never know.
That's definitely true.
I do want to say, I'm looking forward to watching Strange New Worlds and the next season of Lower Decks without taking a single note and just sitting back.
Right.
And having a good time.
You know, and I wouldn't mind if we pop back in, or if I pop back in, or if anybody pops back in. It would be kind of fun to just kind of to do it as someone who doesn't have a podcast, who's just talking about stuff. Because I saw the commercial, by the way, I saw the commercial for Discovery, and they said Discovery, the final season. And I thought to myself, oh, baby Discovery, you got one more season to make me love you. What are you going to do? I can't wait to see.
They've made some bold promises that they're going to fix it and everyone's going to love it. But I'm pretty sure that I've heard that bold promise
4 times, 4 years
in a row. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, that is Star Trek. And we had no idea new Star Trek was going to come. We had no idea our podcast would revitalize the entire franchise.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, Star Trek is everywhere now. And also, like our podcast, people aren't liking Star Trek as much as they used to.
Yeah, that's true.
The past little while.
So I don't know if you noticed. Do you read my notes on when I, like, have you been reading
my notes? I haven't been reading your Star Trek notes this time.
Oh,
not this time.
then you missed. So when I titled my, so for my notes for Old Friends, New Planets, I don't know if anyone caught this or it made anyone worried, but you had reason to worry. Mm-hmm. So I put one last time, Old Friends, New Planets.
Oh.
Yeah. A little ominous. I was being ominous.
I should have
been. Foreshadowing.
I should have been worried.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, folks. John, it's been a pleasure. And we will wrap this up in style. And I think it'll be fun to have a few of our old friends on with us to talk about the project. And we will talk to you again soon. And again, like, it's just been the best. So, John, I'm not going to give the farewell that I'm supposed to give here, because we'll do that next podcast. So we'll just say see you soon.
We'll see you soon. It's a big galaxy.
I think my favorite technology. Okay, well, maybe I'll save that. Okay, I did lie. Not everything's gonna go over perfect. No. Okay, you can edit all this crap out.
Boimler and Rutherford Express. This is a long one. I gotta take a drink. Man, I've had. Oh gosh. Dust. Okay, this is a sad episode. Okay, I'll take 1 minute. Okay. Okay, because I have a water, and it does nothing.